Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your official home for Jaguars football. AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio WOKV. Voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Loggeman. And Jaguars.com senior editor, Vic Ketchman. Break down the last Jaguars game and take a look at the next time we take the field. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Aetna. We want you to know the Jacksonville Transportation Group, the official transportation provider of the Jaguars, and by Prudential Network Realty, extremely full service. Now, to get things started, here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome into Jaguars This Week from the WOKV Jaguars Central Studios inside Jacksonville Stadium. I'm Brian Sexton with you for the next 2 hours, presented by Aetna. And by the way, it's the final 2 hour show of the season. We go to the 1 hour format next week to resume the 2 hour version, what, Joe, August, something like that? Yeah, something like that. Vic Ketchman's here. Hey, Vic, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Good. I won't be here next week.
Neither will I.
Uh-oh.
I'll be joining you at the phone. I'm going to be at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, so I will call in and
I may not be here either.
Second half
that?
Hour.
So Culpepper and Joe Fortunato will have to man it.
Have a nice show.
Yeah. It'll be fun next week. That's what happens when you hit the
Where
first week.
Where are you going to be? Mr. Ketchman.
Golf camp. Yeah, I'm going to golf camp.
Yeah, golf camp.
Yeah.
I'm going to be at the Senior Bowl. You going to be in the woods?
Maybe.
All right. Well, we'll figure a way in. Been a while since you played, is what you're saying. Our phone number this evening is 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Email jags@wokv.com. Lots to talk about. We've got the Cardinals, Eagles, and Ravens in the conference championship games instead of the Giants, the Panthers, and the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that is a long topic of conversation.
I think the Wayne Weaver press conference, though, was fascinating this afternoon. Fascinating. He touched on every subject, from this team's financial situation to naming rights to his belief in his quarterback, his coach, to a vigilant attitude toward drafting the best available player. I mean, he went everywhere, Jeff. It was really good.
Lasted about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And he just kept talking and answered everyone's questions.
You know, the one thing that I'm really excited for is Gene Smith. And for one, to have the owner come out and basically say that, you know, you're the guy. You're the general manager. And for a guy that's worked his way through the organization for a long period of time and has earned the right to be where he's at today. I mean, I think that's a great credit to Gene for starters, but also a great credit to Mr. Weaver for recognizing what he has, you know, basically under his nose here in the building, because some owners don't realize it.
What didn't get out, and maybe not until I put it in my story this afternoon, is the reason for Gene Smith being promoted to general manager, why he all of a sudden got a bump up a couple weeks after getting a bump up. It's because the Cleveland Browns were interested in interviewing him for that position, and that got him promoted again to a title that made a move lateral, and which meant that he couldn't make it. And it says something about this guy's esteem in the league that a team, another team, wanted to interview him for its premier position in personnel. And by the way,
it's not the first team that's come calling for him.
Yeah, Gene is from Northern Ohio. He is from the Cleveland area, the extended Cleveland area. So it would have certainly been a very easy move for him. I think it says something about him wanting to stay here, too.
I think it speaks volumes. And correct me if I'm wrong, but when Coughlin left, he told Wayne Weaver,
"Yeah,
don't get rid of this guy."
Yeah, his exit interview, Tom said, "You know, you need to keep Gene. He's got a head start on the draft. You know, because you're going to be bringing in guys who are going to be behind the curve, and you need to."
But he was speaking,
and he was also speaking long term.
Yes,
yes. Tom Coughlin is a big Gene Smith fan.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene was courted by the Houston Texans also a few years ago before they hired Rick Smith out of Denver. So people around the league are fans of his.
Now, having said all of that, we all had one question about Gene. Would Gene, who's a very likable guy and a mild-mannered sort of person, have the courage to say, no, coach, we're taking my guy.
The title says the courage is there.
Well, but I asked it point blank today to Wayne Weaver. I said, Wayne, do you have a reason to believe? Do you know for a – are you satisfied that Gene is going to be is going to have the courage to exercise his power? In other words, is he going to be able to say, no, guys, I'm taking this guy? And Wayne smiled, and he said, oh, yeah, we had that conversation. We had that discussion. We had that conversation. So clearly he has been empowered, and he has been – and it has been demanded of him that he exercise that power in terms of his convictions on players.
And he's also got a right-hand man that has no problems sharing his opinion.
Terry McDonough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Terry is very vocal, very opinionated, from Boston, just like his old man, Will McDonough, if you remember the name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he has no problem in doing that. And
no.
It'll be interesting. There's a new dynamic over there. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And it does go back to best available player, though.
Yeah. I don't know if I should say it or not. I don't know if he told me don't say it. But I know who he liked last year in
who?
The draft.
Who, Terry McDonough liked?
Oh, he's crazy about Otal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's not shy about saying that either.
Mm-hmm.
And look at Otal.
Worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it sure did work out very well for him. So that'll obviously be something to follow through the course of it. He was asked about his quarterback today, and he said, and I'm quoting him now, we need to get better play out of our quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't as if he retraced his steps, but he went into a longer explanation of what he was looking for from David Garrard.
He said, we need to get better play out of the quarterback position. And then he said, I think he had preceded that by saying offensive line is a priority.
Right.
Is the priority. And then he went on to say that that better offensive line play, meaning, in other words, he said, David will play better when he gets more time to throw. And he also said that he believes that David Garrard is a quarterback who can lead the Jaguars to a championship.
And I think for David, as an individual, yes, you can make him better by making better players show up around him, obviously. But I think David has to do the things that are going to make him better. You hear so much about the great quarterbacks going to work on Tuesday, spending time with the coordinators, talking about what they like and what they don't like. I haven't heard that about David yet. You know, as far as a quarterback dedicating his life to his trade, to his task, spending the extra time. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard for or against. I'm not trying to leave you out there dangling. I can't support you on that one.
Because I haven't heard that.
In other words, he needs to spend more time after hours?
Yes. Okay. Above the 9-to-5, you know, time that regular players spend.
He needs to be more like Peyton Manning.
I mean, the great ones do it. Tom Brady does it.
Right.
Tom Brady goes in on Tuesday nights to get the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in New York, Ken O'Brien, who wasn't the most talented person in the world, went in Tuesday night to get the game plan
mm-hmm.
because he wanted to have a leg up
on
Wednesday
mm-hmm.
ahead of his teammates so that when he went to practice, then he could be ahead of the curve and explain things to his teammates, thereby assuming more of a leadership role. And I think David needs to take that step.
Got to take a break. I've got to go do TV for CBS 47. I'll tell you one thing that would make David better. Watching him throw to someone like Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, you got it. Right,
Larry
on,
was phenomenal
You're
over
right
the
on.
Weekend. And don't talk too much about it in the segment I'm gone because I want to talk about him when I get back. Vic and Jeff are with you for the next segment right after this on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Back on Jaguars This Week, Jeff Loggeman joined by Vic Ketchman. Brian Sexton will be back shortly after a TV guy returns to become radio guy. One of the things that Wayne Weaver also had talked about coaching situations. Jack is in charge of coaching. Gene is in charge of personnel.
Right.
Now you have another opening.
I don't want to. I'll just stop you for a minute. Just interrupt you if I can, if I may. Wayne had a very. He made an interesting comment about, you know, in charge of personnel, this guy in charge of personnel and this guy in charge of coaching. At some point, you know, there's a line between the two. You know, and Wayne referred to it as that the line gets blurred at a certain point, which is I found interesting. You know,
explain that to me.
Well, you know, at some point in time, you turn the players over to the coach, and he has to make decisions, cut guys who this guy acquired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, you've got to. At some point in time, you have to have people who can work together.
Absolutely.
Because it's not draft and cut, it's draft and develop.
Right.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So a coach has to believe that the players his personnel guy has given him, has provided him, are worthy of development, or you've wasted the pick. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's where that line gets blurred. It's not good enough.
But Gene has the authority to say, you coach him.
He has the authority to pick him, but at some point in time, the team is handed over to Jack Del Rio, and he has the authority cut him. That's where the line gets blurred.
But is that authority with the head coach, or is that authority with the personnel guy?
Let me put it this way, Jeff. If you're going to spend your time fighting over territory, you're not going to get it done. You have to have people who can work together. They have to understand the concept is draft and develop, not draft and cut.
I'm talking about the decision to shape the final 53-man roster.
It's the coach's call.
It is.
That's the way I interpret it. Once those players are handed over to Coach Del Rio, it's now, of course, scouting is involved because in the evaluation process, but the coach is going to have his opinions.
Because under a traditional general manager,
okay,
and coach's role, the general manager is the one who determines who the 53 is going to, or who they are going to be, that the coach gets to coach.
Okay, but when we asked that today, and basically what we got was a response that's where the line gets blurred, which lets you know that subject hasn't been clearly defined.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jeff, in any business, in any organization, in any marriage, in any family, in any kind of group setting, you have to have cooperation, you have to have communication, you have to have people pulling in the same direction. So defining who's got what responsibility is fine, but there is a point where these responsibilities come together at a joining point.
Well, they have to. But when there's that gray area where personnel guy wants this guy, coach wants this guy.
Sounds to me
somebody
like,
still clearly has to have.
Yeah, I think Gene. It sounds to me like Gene is being backed so forcefully and so completely by Wayne in all of his comments. It sounds like he's a guy that you don't want to pick a fight with.
Okay, because to me, I mean, obviously, as a general manager, you don't ever want to give a guy that the coach doesn't want to coach.
That's
so
right.
You have to take that into account.
Right.
But under certain circumstances, if there's a guy that the personnel guy feels very strongly about who's going to develop and the coach wants to go in a different direction, somebody has to have the ultimate. There's no consensus.
Well, you know, you're right on it. Let me give you some examples. What you're talking about is the classic clash between personnel man and coach. For instance, Tom Donahoe and Bill Cowher. It's what broke them up. There was a point where one said, no, I want to keep him, and the other said, I want to cut him and keep that guy. And that blurred line became a battleground, became a battlefront, became the dividing line, the thing that divided and embittered those two people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in New England, Scott Pioli and Bill Belichick would seem to have worked beautifully at that dividing line. They seem to have bridged that gap.
Because I think Belichick was the one who had the ultimate say.
I don't know. Probably, yes. Yes. But it seemed like, here's the key, it seemed like they shared the same opinions. It seemed that they shared the same evaluation process. It seemed like that they could look, the two of them could look at the same guy and come away with the same opinion. Mm-hmm. See, that's important. You need to have guys who have the same vision and tend to see things in a similar way, because if you don't have that, you're not going to get agreement, and that's where that line that Wayne referred to as getting blurred can become a battlefront.
Yeah. So,
am I making myself
no,
clear?
No, you are. You are. But I mean, when it comes down to it, though, somebody has to have final say.
Someone's
got to
make the call.
Yeah, somebody's
like
got to make the call.
It sounds like Gene has it.
I mean, there's very few, I think, calls that are very difficult like that. But when you do have them, you have to have it defined.
See, I'll give you an example. Tom Coughlin was obsessed with the 53. And he was obsessed with, I got to have 9 offensive linemen, and I got to have 8 defensive linemen, and, you know, in the numbers. Whereas a guy like Gene, he's going to say, oh, no. Hey, let's go to 10 offensive linemen this
because
year.
Because we've got 10 quality guys made.
Exactly. See, that's where that line can get blurred, because coaches think in terms of
game day.
They think in terms of game day.
Yep.
And personnel people think in terms of the big picture.
Yep. Because some guy, a 10th offensive lineman may have more value than, let's say, a 6th linebacker.
He may be a starter for you 2 years from now.
Yeah, and that's
where
that's
extra defensive lineman you're keeping is just he's a guy.
He's just a guy. So I think that's interesting. Now
you need to have a coach who can see that big picture. I think Jack can. I think Jack's good at the big picture. Tom was not. He was terrible at it.
Yeah, he was.
He saw this year and this year only.
He was a little short-sighted.
Yeah.
As you could see by some of the free agent acquisitions kind of towards the end.
Yeah, and it's why the Giants said, you're out. Coach.
You coach.
Ernie's got the con.
And now it's not Ernie, it's Reese, right?
Jerry Reese.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many openings are there on Del Rio staff? Joe 6. DeCamillis is gone, and now you had
Greg Williams, Bob Prince.
Robert Prince left to be the wide receivers coach.
Yeah,
the Denver
Tom
Broncos,
Williams,
I believe.
Seattle Seahawks.
Seahawks, I mean.
Tom Williams went to Yale, and then, of course, the two strength guys, Mark Osanovich and Les Ebert, have to be replaced. So there are 6 openings on Jack's staff.
Any names surfacing for any of those openings?
I have a feeling that there's a possibility that they won't replace either Tom Williams or Robert Prince for the reason that they were
assistant position coaches.
Bob Prince was assistant wide receivers coach, and Tom Williams was assistant defensive line coach. In a tight economy, they're vulnerable. Those positions are vulnerable. The two coordinator positions obviously will be filled. Now, the special teams coordinator sounds like it's going to come from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
The defensive coordinator job, I've heard that they've interviewed guys from the outside, but they've got a couple guys on the staff here. I mean, Donnie Henderson has done it. Mark Duffner has done it. I think they have to be considered.
You would think.
Yeah. I'm sure they are being considered, not just think.
Is there a chance that the head coach could go the route of Lovie Smith?
I can't imagine he wouldn't. I consider it. Jack Del Rio was the defensive coordinator for 1 year for a Carolina Panthers team that rose from the bottom of the league rankings to number 2 in the league in defense in 2002. All right. Of course, he had Julius Peppers, but Julius Peppers was a nothing until Jack Del Rio got there.
Mm-hmm.
And he took that defense. John Fox, defensive guy, was the head coach. But, hey, listen, Mike Smith gets the credit, got the credit here, right? I think you got to give the credit to Jack Del Rio for what was done in Carolina in 2002. Hey, I would want Jack Del Rio to be the defensive coordinator of the Jaguars.
Thinking.
I mean, if it's a choice between Jack Del Rio or some guy who you're not quite sure if he's big enough for the job, I'll take Jack Del Rio.
I'm with you. All right, we're going to take a break here on Jaguars This Week. When we come back, Brian Sexton will be back at the con.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Best Buy. Remember to stop by the brand new Best Buy in the St. Johnstown Center. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, Vic Ketchman, join us, 355-NFL-1. Joe Fortunato is alongside, 355-6351. Did you talk much about Fitzgerald, or did you save
it? No, we saved that for you. Oh. It's all yours.
I don't know that I can say anything more than you've written this week, but watching him against Carolina was as much fun as watching Randy Moss on Thanksgiving Day his rookie year against the Cowboys. Remember that game where he just made everyone look silly?
He's a great catcher, but the other guy is better once he gets the ball in his hands.
I thought Fitzgerald was tremendous, and I have not seen him
he's
play
fearless.
Very much.
The other guy I'm talking about is Anquan Boldin.
Yeah.
When Anquan
Boldin, he's a
Boldin,
bigger guy.
But when he gets the ball in his hands, Anquan Boldin makes you go more wow than what Larry Fitzgerald does.
I haven't seen enough of either one of them, but I sat and I watched him. And you're talking about a guy that's, what, 6'4", 225, you know, big guy, physical guy. But he made some catches. The one catch that he made where he went up and got it, you remember the one I'm talking about?
He was up to their shoulders.
And he kind of lost it back here and had to pull it back in. How many receivers in that in this league make that catch?
Did you happen to see clips of his pregame routine?
No, I didn't see that.
He goes through a pregame catch the ball with one hand routine. Okay, the left hand and the right hand. Now, and I'm not talking about juggle it up in the air. He goes up with
like
one
glue.
Hand clean. Clink,
like, and it, glue.
Like he swallowed the ball with his hand.
Like he wore the old Stick'Em.
Yes, exactly.
Back in the 70s.
I don't want to gush too much, you know, and then sound silly, because Jerry Rice is the greatest receiver who has ever lived. Although Don Hudson, you know,
you could lay claim
you
to
could
that.
You could say that about him. Jerry Rice has numbers I can't imagine anyone will ever approach. But I have never seen a receiver look more natural, more fluid, more at ease in the way he moves. He is fearless. He runs through secondaries as though there's nobody there.
Well, he's the reason that they have a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
No question.
Because he and Kurt Warner together were tremendous.
Oh, they're
against
good.
Carolina.
Yeah, they're good.
But and their running game isn't that good, and their offensive line isn't that good.
But they're running the ball and stopping the run now.
Their defense is what's getting them there now.
You think the defense is playing that well?
They're stopping
the
run.
They were intercepting the ball and taking it away, but
because
I thought that was Jake DeLong, too.
If you looked at Arizona's defense earlier in the year, I mean, marginal at best.
Right.
And now all of a sudden they get to the playoffs. I mean, this is a Indianapolis Colt-like turnaround for that defense when the Colts ended up winning the Super Bowl.
You're right on. They are running the ball and stopping the run. Yes, it is Larry Fitzgerald and Kurt Warner that is there. That's their calling card combination. But right now it's Edger and James and their defense and their run defense that is the difference for them.
Because I thought watching Dockett, for Darnell Dockett,
he's a really good player.
High pick.
Yeah.
And for a lot of years he was an underachiever. And now, all of a sudden, playoff time, this guy's playing really well.
Well,
their
and Antrell
front's
Roll,
playing well.
Antrell Roll, who has moved to safety from corner.
And then Rodgers Cromartie.
Oh, yeah.
Who
he made a really
a
nice
rookie.
Turnaround.
Well, there. We loved him on draft day. I remember. Yeah. I can remember gushing about him.
Yeah.
Making great interceptions.
Well, I think in our mock draft, we had him coming here. We had him sliding.
Yeah.
One of them we did. I don't know.
I think it was
that
him.
To be our final?
I think it was him. He's from
Troy,
right?
Yeah.
We really thought he was going to be here.
That he might be around. Yeah.
How about DeMarcus Ware, OCU Manure, and Rodgers Cromartie? Those are Troy guys. Isn't Manure a Troy guy?
I don't think
Troy
guy?
Manure
is.
Not
I,
sure.
Is Rodgers Cromartie, was he Troy?
Yes.
I know they were all small school. Let me look up.
I don't have my
I
book.
Think he was.
I don't have my draft book with me.
I think it was. By the way, we got a caller on the line. How do you call our show from the Netherlands?
Internet.
Can you?
Is there a place in Florida called the Netherlands?
Bring him up, because we got Robert from the Netherlands, and I'm just curious how you call the show from the Netherlands.
What's going on?
You use a phone.
Well, yeah, but I mean, do you have to?
No, wait a minute.
That's comedy. That is comedy.
So Robert. you're paying a big bill on a phone to call us?
Yeah, well,
kind of. Well, give me the kind.
I mean, does 1-800-355-NFL-1 work from the Netherlands?
If you have 00, the international dialing code, then you just get in.
Who's paying for this call? That's what I want to know.
I am.
Wow! I'm impressed. What's your question? I guess we shouldn't keep you on the air all night.
Well, yeah, what is it, 1 o'clock in the morning there?
It's almost now. Just past midnight now. It's 42 minutes past midnight.
Okay. Gotcha.
Well, what would you like to say?
It's about Gene Smith, because, well, first of all, you have been talking about draft and develop for about a couple weeks now since the season ended.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a line in your story today that kind of stood out to me. You know, kind of had a theory about hiring front office personnel.
Uh-huh.
Wayne Weaver said it. It shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that Gene Smith has been groomed for this job.
Yeah, that was Wayne Weaver said that. Gene has been with the team. Gene has been with the team since 1994. He has moved all the way up the ladder. He came to the team as a Blesto scout. Now, what that means when I say Blesto scout is Blesto is one of two league scouting combines. The reason that nobody knows what Blesto stands for is because it stands for something that doesn't make any sense anymore. And here's what I mean. Blesto stands for Bears, Lions, Eagles, Steelers, Talent Organization. Except the Eagles don't even belong to it anymore. See, it's a 1960s invention. So that's why nobody puts into parentheses, you know, Bears, Lions, Eagles, Steelers, Talent Organization. And there's more teams in it than those teams. And one of them, as I said, isn't even in it. But under the agreement Blesto has, when a team subscribes to the Blesto service, the agreement is that they will pay the salary of a scout that Blesto puts in the building. And Gene Smith, Blesto at that time was headquartered in Pittsburgh, and Gene Smith was the Blesto scout that Blesto assigned to Jacksonville when Jacksonville was awarded an NFL franchise.
Yeah, okay, but one thing, you've been talking about draft and developing players, but I think it's, I don't know sure because I don't follow the entire league, just Jaguars, when it comes to front office personnel, but I think it's the same for guys like Gene Smith. Instead of going out and getting the flashy new guy and firing someone you've had in your organization for a couple of years, just promote from within and hire someone cheap to fill the lower.
Well, I don't know if he's cheap. I don't know what his salary is, but I can tell you this. They promoted from within, and the guy they promoted interviewed for the head job in Atlanta a year ago. The guy they promoted from within was about to be pirated away by the Cleveland Browns. The guy they hired from within also had feelers from another team. I'm going to guess it was the Lions. I don't know, but I know that he interviewed in Atlanta. Hey, they were going to lose him. It's that simple. If they didn't do what it took to keep him, they were going to lose him. And you see, Gene is important. Gene is important. Was important for the Jaguars to keep because it's about continuity. Now, this team has struggled with continuity on its coaching staff. You know, got a lot of coming and going.
Does not have one staff member on the coaching side of things from the original.
Well, I got to believe Jack would like to change it. I got to believe that any coach would like to keep the same staff year after year. You know, you are going to lose guys, but, you know, I mean, look at the situation in Indianapolis, how that staff, you know, has stayed the same, and they, you know, with guys like
Howard
Meeks,
Howard
Mudd, Gene Uwe,
right.
Terling,
Jim Caldwell. Took over.
Belichick's staff has virtually been intact, with the exception of guys getting
Cornell and Charlie Weiss.
Now Josh McDaniels.
Well, and Mangini and McDaniels. Yeah, I mean, he's lost coordinators, but he's promoted from within.
The staff in Pittsburgh, you know, now that they've got a new coach and he's settled in, he's kept his staff for a couple
years.
You've
kind of seen a little of that here. I mean, Kennedy Pola and Mike Tice.
Yeah,
and
you
Andy
want that.
Heck,
you
and,
want that.
Munkin's been around a couple years now. It looks like Shula will be back. Yeah, you're starting, I mean, not like the Colts, but you're
look
starting
at the,
to
look
see
at
a couple
the Jaguars
years under
personnel
the
department. James Harris resigned, for lack of a better word. I mean, that's what it is, okay? Art Perkins, I don't know what they called that.
Fired.
Fired. Larry Wright, I don't know what they call that. But there's three guys,
right,
you know, from your personnel department last year who aren't going to be with your personnel department this year. Geez, you know, you don't want to turn everything over every year. You need that continuity. What Gene Smith is giving the Jaguars is he's giving them continuity. He's giving them a guy that they've had from the beginning, and he's familiar with the way the Jaguars want to do business, and they're familiar with how Gene does business.
All right, before we take the break, you were correct that OCU Manura was from Troy State. However, Rogers Cromartie is from East Tennessee State.
Oh, that's right. Who's the? There is a Troy guy, though.
DeMarcus Ware is Troy.
No, there's a corner.
And linebacker Marcus
Leotis
Washington.
Leotis McKelvin? Pitt, right?
Leotis McKelvin is from Troy. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, they're the guys.
Yeah. By the way, how about Auburn High School, where DeMarcus Ware and Human Yura both attended?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Rush the passer.
A little of this and a little of that. We'll take a break. Come back with one more segment in hour number one on Jaguars This Week.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
So back to wrap up the first hour of Jaguars This Week and then do our final second hour of the 2008 season. Go to the one-hour version next week, so that means if you want to talk, jump in, 355-NFL-1. Bill is on the south side. He's up next. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I wanted to talk about the draft a little bit, but first I'd like to congratulate Joe Fortunato for coming back to Jacksonville doing the right thing.
All right.
And also congratulate him on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, see, that was why he ultimately couldn't take it. He just couldn't be in a star knowing that the Eagles were going to get this far.
Yeah.
It would have been too much for him.
Yeah, well, anyway, you guys only know him from, like, when you came to town, 95, but, you know, between Mike Dorwart and him, you know, they had one foot in bankruptcy and the other on a banana peel when they came to town and brought that station right back to what it is today. Anyway, the draft, it just strikes me that, let's say you have a number one draft guy, let's say whoever, you know, Colt McCoy, Percy Harvin, whatever, he's kind of forced to wind up on a losing team. I mean, do you think we'll ever see a day where they can maybe,
No, he's not forced.
Well,
some of the teams win and some of the teams lose, and you're going to be drafted. Where do you think Percy Harvin's going to be drafted?
Oh, hell, I don't know. He seemed pretty good.
Bottom of the first round, that's where the winners are.
Yeah, I thought they usually... Oh, okay, maybe I misunderstood the whole thing.
The worst teams are at the top, the best teams are at the bottom, record wise, unless they trade and somehow change the order. But I mean, Tony Dorsett was coming off a national championship, and he was the second pick of the draft by the Dallas Cowboys, who traded with the Seattle Seahawks, which were an expansion franchise. So Dorsett went to a team that won the Super Bowl title in his rookie season.
Okay, well, it's not a cut and dry thing then. Okay, I thought it was more like a iron-fisted, totalitarian, socialist entity, this NFL. You know what I mean?
it was very successful.
Yeah. Okay, now, well, I was just wondering about that.
Vic wants to go back to the day of no free agency, but you know what, Vic? Free agency has done more for this league than anything.
Okay, but I can tell you this. If the Jaguars want to win, here's what you do. Go on vacation the first week of free agency, because the first week of free agency is a trap for fools.
Yeah. Why do you say it's done more for the league than anything?
When did you ever talk about football in January and February?
He's right.
You never did.
He's right.
You never did. It made football a year-round sport.
Baseball had... and still has what they call the hot stove league,
right?
Which means that guys would stand around the hot stove in the winter and, you know, in the general store and talk about baseball trades, etc. Football never had that. It does. That's what free agency has become. It's become the football hot stove league.
I remember when I was in New York and Bruce Cosett was our head coach, and he had said something about free agency to the effect it's never going to happen. He old school. I mean, Bruce played as a player when it was the iron-fisted league, and he never saw it coming. I told Bruce.